Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Friday, June 16, 2023. The UN says 5.9 million Sudanese need urgent food assistance.
Over 40,000 tons of food have been stolen and looted. That is around one-third of the total stocks WFP had in the country before the conflict. The total value of losses so far stands at over $89 million.
And officials in South Sudan say the country has the best environment for investment.
Please lift the sanctions. Arms embargo is really an obstacle to a lot of things. Targeted sanctions are harming the future of this country. And the fact that the peace is being implemented is a reality.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States has condemned human rights violations committed in Sudan's two-month-old violence, including reports of sexual violence and targeting of civilians along ethnic lines by the paramilitary rapid support forces and allied militias in West Darfur state. This comes a day after the violence in West Darfur ended in the killing of West Darfur Governor Khamis Abdoulaye Abakar, reportedly by RSF soldiers and allied militia. Nabil Biagio reached Samar Salman, a strategic analyst and president of the U.S. Educated Sudanese Association, to discuss the significance of the statement.
I commend the immediate condemnation by the U.S. and some of the U.N. bodies of the horrific and bloody atrocities committed in Sudan and West Darfur, specifically Jenina. I ask the question as to whether the international community is serious about the responsibility to protect innocent civilians from violent war criminals who are, as we speak, continuing to commit these atrocities, continuing to commit ethnic cleansing and what is possibly now genocide. Jenina has been completely wiped out, and residents are currently mass evacuating westward to Chad. The only way to end this war is for a coalition of the U.S., the U.N., the AU, and IGAD to work together to enforce and expand the U.N. arms embargo on Darfur to all of Sudan. There should be serious enforcement of both the U.S. arms embargo as well as the U.N. arms embargo. That would be the first serious action that they could commit to end this war. The second would be to implement and enforce a no-fly zone. And the third is to continue to freeze the assets and the parastatal companies of the belligerents, both the Sudanese armed forces and the rapid support forces.
Since the start of this conflict in mid-April, the rapid support forces have been accused of many violations against civilians in Khartoum and Darfur and other places, rape, forceful evictions, murder, etc. But there has been this hesitancy from the international community to even some people in Sudan to condemn the acts and put the blame on RSF. How do you read the State Department finally calling out RSF for these violations in West Darfur? And you are someone who meets with the State Department officials at the Sudan desk, and you do work with them. Do you see any shift or any of the measures you said they should take against violators coming into force?
When the U.S. Department of State started to apply the targeted sanctions, they applied those targeted sanctions on both the SAF and the RSF equally. So my reading is that the U.S. administration is putting equal blame on both of these belligerents for fueling this war. And the fact that they have called out the RSF And they've also called at the SAF for their inability or their lack of willingness to protect Sudanese civilians. I think that the fact that the war has now reached a fever pitch and what is happening in Jenena in West Darfur is really now approaching genocide. I think that there's a shift in strategy, and we're going to see a change in tactics from the U.S. administration, where the current approach is no longer feasible, and there has to be a different approach.
That's Samar Salman, strategic analyst and president of U.S. Educated Sudanese Association. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio from the U.S. State of Virginia this past hour. The World Food Program is scaling up food aid to support 5.9 million people across Sudan over the next 6 months as hunger rises in the country, in the conflict-stricken country. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
WFP reports it has provided emergency food assistance and nutrition support to nearly 1 million people in 14 of 18 Sudan states since the aid agency resumed its life-saving operations on May 3rd. Speaking from Port Sudan, WFP's acting country director for Sudan, Abdurrahman Maygag, warns an estimated 2 to 2.5 million Sudanese are expected to slip into hunger in the coming months due to the ongoing violence. He says the security situation makes it very challenging to provide aid to this desperately needy population. He says WFP assistance, assets, and premises have been repeatedly attacked and looted, hampering efforts to reach vulnerable families in dire need of assistance.
Over 40,000 tons of food have been stolen and looted. That is around one-third of the total stocks WFP had in the country before the conflict. The total value of losses so far stands at over $89 million.
The Federal Ministry of Health reports more than 1,000 people have been killed and over 11,700 injured since fighting between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid defense forces erupted April 15th. The World Health Organization reports approximately one-third of Sudan's population of more than 45.6 million people already was facing hunger before the fighting began. WHO spokeswoman Carla Drysdale warns the risk of worsening malnutrition is imminent because growing numbers of people are unable to access or afford to buy food in local markets.
4 million children and pregnant and breastfeeding women are acutely malnourished. More than 100,000 under five children with severe acute malnutrition with medical complications are in need of specialized care at stabilization centers.
She adds an estimated 50,000 severely acutely malnourished children need ongoing round-the-clock care. The WFP says it is very concerned that the ongoing conflict could undermine the current planting season. It notes insecurity and soaring prices of fertilizer and seeds could lead to a below-average harvest in September. Were that to happen, it says acute food insecurity in Sudan could rise to record levels. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The International Credit Rating Agency, Moody's, and the International Monetary Fund say the Sudan conflict will harm its neighbor's economy if it continues. In the markets of N'Djamena, Chad's capital, traders and customers alike have already been feeling the pinch from the high inflation as the economic fallout of the war threatens their love of hot, sweet tea. Henry Wilkins reports from N'Djamena.
In the markets of N'Djamena, Chad's capital, the economic effects of Sudan's conflict are already being felt. Hot sweet tea, a favourite beverage for many Chadians, has been one of the first casualties. Almost all the country's red tea, so-called for its rich colour, as well as Chad's supply of sugar, are imported from Sudan. Tea seller Abdou Allah Mohamed told VOA he has had to raise prices. He says it's part of the culture, and some people like their tea sweet. adding that since the fighting started, his business has been affected and the sugar is more expensive. Market trader Idris Adam Ismail said that because no goods have been coming from Sudan since the war started, he now has to buy sugar from Cameroon, which is more expensive, putting even more pressure on his business, already suffering from high inflation. He said that before the conflict, a bag of sugar from Sudan cost about $50, but now it's gone up to around $90. He added that goods are more expensive than people can afford because of the Sudan fighting. He said he wants the fighting to end so that he can continue his business in the best way possible. Jemena has a closer trading relationship with Cameroon than Sudan, but analysts say cities in the east of Chad, for which the opposite is true, are suffering the most. Hoinathi Ramaji is an analyst for the Institute for Security Studies.
All the big cities along the eastern border, starting from Adre, Abéché, Amjaras, etc., have a very close connection with Sudan. And there was a lot of business then coming from the Sudanese port.
The economic impacts of Sudan's war are not confined to Chad. After returning from a recent visit to Cairo, Patrick Heinisch, an emerging markets economist covering the Horn of Africa and Nile Valley at the German bank Helaba, described the economic impact there.
They already say that real estate prices in Cairo have risen because of the influx of Sudanese refugees. They also want accommodation. They're looking for apartments. So this is one of the first impacts. It also depends on how many people will in the future continue to escape to the neighboring countries. So will it really have an impact on overall inflation, for example?
Moody's Investor Service, a US-based credit rating company, has said the Sudan conflict will likely hurt Sudan's neighbors' credit ratings, as well as those of developed banks in the region, while the International Monetary Fund also warns of growing economic impacts as the war continues. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Jemena, Chad.
From Jemena, we move to Juba, where South Sudan's Minister of Petroleum says the country's oil sector is running out of raw materials needed for the production of crude oil. An advisor at the ministry says oil companies are using limited supplies of stocked materials before fighting erupted in Sudan. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayar reports from Juba.
South Sudan relies on Sudan for the export of oil and import of raw materials used in production of oil. In speaking to VOA during an exclusive interview Friday, Awol Gabriel Chuang, a technical advisor in South Sudan's Ministry of Petroleum, says Sudan's crisis could affect South Sudan's oil sector.
We have some difficulties in terms of getting logistics for the oil operations, especially the critical materials that are needed to run the oil operation in South Sudan. We have difficulties, of course, because Port Sudan is not working smoothly. And then also we have some difficulties in regards to also the flow of oil because, you know, sometimes in the stations, people are scared. We are worried. If anything happens, then, of course, we could be in difficulties if the oil is forced to stop.
Fighting broke out in Khartoum in mid-April between Sudan armed forces led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and the paramilitary group Rapid Support Forces under General Mohamed Abdan Dagalo. Chuang says some oil companies managed to secure raw materials using an alternative route.
We are also working very hard to make sure that we find alternatives for the oil not to stop. And most of the, you know, the critical materials also have been rerouted to other routes like Mombasa and Djibouti. And as we speak also, they have started to receive some materials through Djibouti. But the only worry as well is the connection of the route from South Sudan border in Bagag to the oil fields, which needs to be worked on.
Chuang says President Salva Kiir's office is keeping an eye on a road construction from Bagag to the oil fields in Upper Nile State as an alternative route for exporting oil via the port of Djibouti. He says the landlocked oil-producing country has learned some lessons from Sudan's conflict and that it will develop a variety of alternative routes for its oil export and import of important goods.
The production is around 168, 70, something like that. Yeah, but it should even go higher because of the logistics. We hope that the war with Sudan will also, you know, stop. And then now it will even improve. It can even go beyond 170. Because, you know, when there was no assurances of getting the critical materials, there was a problem. But as long as we are able to get alternatives, then I think it's now stable.
On Monday, Kenyan President William Ruto announced during an IGAD Head of State Summit in Djibouti that Kenya is working to convince Sudan's warring generals to end the two-month-old conflict. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, South Sudanese leaders are calling on investors to put their money into the oil sector. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work. Making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. South Sudan's Minister for Presidential Affairs says sanctions imposed on the East African nation has affected the development of its oil sector. Barnaba Marielle Benjamin made the remarks in Juba on Thursday during South Sudan's sixth oil and power conference. For VOA News, Juliana Shepai reports from Juba.
Speaking on behalf of President Kiir, Marielle says many development-related activities in South Sudan are on hold due to targeted multiple sanctions imposed on some leaders and companies by the United Nations, the Troika countries, and the European Union.
Please lift the sanctions. Arms embargo is really an obstacle to a lot of things. Targeted sanctions are harming the future of this country. And the fact that the peace is being implemented is a reality.
In 2018, the United States imposed sanctions on 15 South Sudanese oil operators accused of allegedly giving cash to the government of South Sudan. The U.S. State Department released a report in 2018 blaming the South Sudan government and some corrupt officials, actors for using oil revenue to purchase weapons and fund militias undermining the country's peace, security and stability. Marielle urged investors to use the encouraging conditions in South Sudan by spending resources in the oil and power sectors.
Peace is holding, stability is coming. We have enormous resources that will take you off when you get involvement. These things are there. It's not fantasy, it's reality. And that's why they call our country the virgin territory of Africa.
South Sudan's Minister of Petroleum, Port Kang, says women across the country should be given opportunities to participate in the development of the country's natural resources. Kang says the country's petroleum industry is dominated by men, adding that women should be encouraged to develop skills in the oil sector.
Every time we travel, you will be faced with a challenge where you have too many women and they begin to ask you, are there no women in South Sudan? We cannot survive without women, of course. And if we cannot, then it means we will never take this country very far without equal footing with our women.
Martin Abucha, South Sudan Minister of Mining, who addressed delegates at the conference Thursday, says renewable energy poses threat to the oil sector.
Though South Sudan and the region has negligible contribution to the current climatic crisis, it has enormously been impacted. The urgent call for a transition to renewable energy may deprive South Sudan, the region, or Africa from industrialization, or it may cost Africa.
Magna Mudiyiwa, Zimbabwe's Deputy Minister of Energy, says South Sudan has the potential to promote development in Africa using the vast natural resources in the country.
Zimbabwe has a lot to learn from South Sudan, which has done oil exploration and production before us. Zimbabwe and South Sudan currently have strong ties in the education sector through student exchange programs that have seen students from South Sudan studying at various universities in Zimbabwe under a government-to-government scholarship program. The cooperation can be strengthened to include training and capacity building in oil and gas.
The two-day conference brought together ministers and other officials from South Africa and Egypt, as well as delegates from international companies in the oil sector. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
Still on oil issues, some civil society activists in South Sudan say the government should enforce good standard practices during oil explorations at various oil fields across the country. The chairperson of a group calling itself Civil Society Coalition on Natural Resources says investors should protect the environment as well as care for the needs of communities in oil-producing states. For VOA News, Dimo Silva Aurelio reports from Juba.
Charles Judo Onak, the chairperson of the Civil Society Coalition on Natural Resources, says investors who have secured lucrative deals in South Sudan's oil sector should protect communities living in the oil fields from pollution. The coalition says several regional and international investors are eyeing South Sudan's oil industry. Onak says as new investors join the oil sector, the environmental pollution could increase in the oil fields across the country.
Enhance environmental protection measures to secure good environmental governance that protects communities and biodiversity in oil-producing areas. Invest oil revenue in economic infrastructural development and better services delivery to the people of South Sudan.
Farouk Ismail, another member of the coalition, says the civil society should be included in key decision-making processes on matters related to oil exploration and production in the country. Ismail says civil society plays an important oversight in the oil sector.
You cannot prosper or go further without the voices of the civil society in terms of correcting and then giving in advocacy information on where we think things were not done right and where we need to correct and what level of support should the government bring in. That includes the opening up of the civic space that allows us to express ourselves freely, giving out all the information to the public and also giving us a leverage to bring in more expertise into the civil society organizations.
The rights group says the two-day oil, gas and exhibition conference 2023 could position South Sudan as a key player in petroleum exploration, production, innovation and energy cooperation in East Africa, the Middle East, North Africa and Central African regions. South Sudan's Minister of Petroleum, Port Kang Chol, told reporters in April that South Sudan produces 170,000 barrels of oil per day. Oil revenue funds nearly 90% of the South Sudan annual budget. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
We love to hear your remarks on issues in this broadcast. My colleague Nabil Biagio is ready with this week's listener comment. Take it over, Nabil.
Thank you, John. We begin with this voice note.
Hello, John Tanza. Call me Daniel Dunmajok from Rumbek. Very unfortunate, we accept when we heard that the coronavirus is still in Uganda. Meanwhile, it is within the countries bordering with Uganda. I urge all governments to look into it by preferring corona tests and vaccination campaign.
This listener says, hello VOA, this is John Guy from Juba in South Sudan. I would like to take this opportunity to call upon the government of South Sudan to intervene in community conflict in Upper Nile State. Many people died and thousands have been displaced in protection of civilian sites. Let the U.S. impose sanctions against South Sudan. Thanks. Another listener says, hello, VOA, I am Doug Mading from Lake State, Rumbek. This issue of the Sudan conflict is affecting us here in South Sudan because we have our relatives there in Sudan. There's no way they will come back. We were receiving goods from Sudan, now it's cut off. Thanks. This fan says, hi, John and Nabil. I am John Bosco from Yei. Thanks for your usual updates on South Sudan in Focus. I am asking the commissioner of Yei River County to track down those people who are removing iron sheets, metallic windows and doors from people's houses in Lutaya residential area, just 2 miles from Yei town. Thanks. Mal Adau Mal in Seattle, Washington says, hello, John and Nabil. The slippery situation in Darfur cannot just wait for 2 weeks for the IGAD delegation to meet the warring parties. It needs a quick intervention from the international community because what we're seeing is not far from the 2013 South Sudan's war and the Rwandan genocide. This fan writes, hello, Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. Call me Santino Mariel Majok from Mapel in Western Bahar Ghazali State. Wow. I appeal to the Sudan warring parties not to put their interests first because innocent civilians are dying on a daily basis. What will you achieve after thousands of Sudanese innocent civilians lost their lives? Whom are you going to rule? Only empty buildings left in Sudan. Sorry, yes, Sudanese leaders. Samuel Ramon in Yei says, hi, VOA, South Sudan in Focus. Our local food manufacturers had poor yield of food production due to climate change and instability, which could not cater to us, the host communities, as well as refugees. I am appealing to our local food manufacturers to produce food in tons for home consumption and economic activities to meet their basic needs since a little calm of peace has returned to the country. And thanks. Tong Chuni Yong Kwai from Juba, South Sudan says, I am wishing Pope Francis a quick recovery in Jesus' name. Amen. Peter Gonyanyang Majungdul in Block 3 in Bortown writes, the inspection visit by the Justice and Interior Ministers to the Central Prison is welcome news, and this will inform both ministers on the way forward to improve inmates' living conditions and also avoid the delayed trials common in most prisons across the country. James Roy Majok from Unity State's Bantu Town writes, hi Nabil Biagio and John Tanza. South Sudan's government should send a team to quell ongoing fighting in Malakal POC site, where many civilians died and others have been wounded. It's the mandate of the South Sudan government to protect its citizens not to die from nothing. Mading Malwal Alwong in Juba writes, when human lives are endangered, when human dignity is in jeopardy, national borders and sensitivities become irrelevant. Wherever men and women are persecuted because of their race, religion, or political views. It is sad that the Sudan armed forces and Darfur movements have failed to protect the people of Western Darfur state, including the state governor Khamis Abubakar, who was captured and killed, according to multiple sources, by the RSF in the state capital Jenena. With the killing of the West Darfur governor, the conflict in the Sudan and in Darfur in particular has entered a horrible phase.
Views expressed in this segment does not represent the views of the Voice of America or this program. Keep your comments coming and we shall sample them every Friday. Our WhatsApp number is +1 202 630 8011. That's all we prepared for you this Friday. We now leave you with a radio and whistle featuring B2C and the song Bitizima.
Galira munyumba ya mainja na komerera misumari. Ah, your love is so wicked, love.
So wicked, oh, so wicked, oh.
We've been listening to Radio and Whistle featuring B2C and the song Bitter Zima. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you missed this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Gwen Uten, and engineer, Carl Sterling, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us next week for another edition of South